He prodded moodily at the lumps of charred grey fish on his plate. Harry glanced automatically at Ron's neck and saw, as he had expected, the golden chain of the Horcrux glinting there. He managed to fight down the impulse to swear at Ron, whose attitude would, he knew, improve slightly when the time came to take off the locket. "Your mother can't produce food out of thin air," said Hermione. "No one can. Food is the first of the five principal exceptions to Gamp's law of elemental transfigure." "Oh, speak English, can't you?" Ron said, prising a fishbone out from between his teeth. "It's impossible to make good food out of nothing. You can summon it if you know where it is. You can transform it. You can increase the quantity if you've already got some."
"Well, don't bother increasing this. It's disgusting," said Ron.
"Harry caught the fish, and I did my best with it. I notice I'm always the one who ends up sorting out the food, because I'm a girl, I suppose." "No, it's because you're supposed to be the best at magic," shot back Ron. Hermione jumped up, and bits of roast pike slid off her tin plate onto the floor. "You can do the cooking tomorrow, Ron. You can find the ingredients and try and charm them into something worth eating. And I'll sit here and pull faces and moan, and you can see how you..."
"Shut up,"
said Harry, leaping to his feet and holding up both hands.
"Shut up, now!"
Hermione looked outraged.
"How can you side with him? He hardly ever does the cook. Hermione, be quiet. I can hear someone."
He was listening hard, his hands still raised, warning them not to talk. Then, over the rush and gush of the dark river beside them, he heard voices again. He looked around at the sneakerscope. It was not moving.
"You cast the Muffliato charm over us, right?"
he whispered to Hermione.
"I did everything,"
she whispered back.
"Muffliato, muggle repelling, and disillusionment charms, all of it. They shouldn't be able to hear or see us, whoever they are."
Heavy scuffing and scraping noises, plus the sound of dislodged stones and twigs, told them that several people were clambering down the steep wooded slope that descended to the narrow bank where they had pitched the tent. They drew their wands, waiting. The enchantments they had cast around themselves ought to be sufficient, in the near total darkness, to shield them from the notice of muggles and normal witches and wizards. If these were Death Eaters, then perhaps their defences were about to be tested by dark magic for the first time. The voices became louder, but no more intelligible as the group of men reached the bank. Harry estimated that their owners were fewer than 20 feet away, but the cascading river made it impossible to tell for sure. Hermione snatched up the beaded bag and started to rummage. After a moment, she drew out 3 extendable ears and threw one each to Harry and Ron, who hastily inserted the ends of the flesh-coloured strings into their ears and fed the other ends out of the tent entrance. Within seconds, Harry heard a weary male voice.
"There ought to be a few salmon in here. Or do you reckon it's too early in the season? That's the old salmon."
There were several distinct splashes, and then the slapping sounds of fish against flesh. Somebody grunted appreciatively. Harry pressed the extendable ear deeper into his own. Over the murmur of the river, he could make out more voices, but they were not speaking English or any human language he had ever heard. It was a rough and unmelodious tongue, a string of rattling, guttural noises, and there seemed to be 2 speakers, one with a slightly lower, slower voice than the other. A fire danced into life on the other side of the canvas. Large shadows passed between tent and flames. The delicious smell of baking salmon wafted tantalizingly in their direction. Then came the clinking of cutlery on plates, and the first man spoke again.
"Here, Griphook! Gornok!"
"Goblins!"
Hermione mouthed at Harry, who nodded.
"Thank you,"
said the goblins together in English.
"So, you 3 have been on the run how long?"
asked a new, mellow and pleasant voice. It was vaguely familiar to Harry, who pictured a round-bellied, cheerful-faced man.
6 weeks, 7, I forget,"
said the tired man.
"Met up with Griphook in the first couple of days, and joined forces with Gornok not long after. Nice to have a bit of company."
There was a pause while knives scraped plates, and tin mugs were picked up and replaced on the ground.
"What made you leave, Ted?"
continued the man.